Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu ne Dham Sri Dvaj Sigra Harsh Vasakshi Gaur Bhaktrindi Kiya Gaur Sri Sri Radha Shama Bhagavad Gopa Gopinath Shama Sundaradha Kundi Gide Bhagavad Ki Jai Mantaraj Shima Bhagavad Dham Ki Jai Lord of Himanandi All glories to the Asamadu All glories to the Asamadu All glories to the Asamadu All glories to the Lord of Sri Sri Sri
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
It will read from Srimad Bhagavatam First Canto, Chapter 18, Text Number 4. Notama Shloka Vartanam Jusatam Tat Katam Ritam Sat Sambramo Antakalipi Smaratam Tat Padam Bhujam Nutama shloka vatanam Yusattam tat kritam itam Satyam brahmanta kalipi Smaratam tat padam bhujam Nutama shloka vatanam Jusatam tat katam ritam Sat sambramon takalipi Smaratam tat katam bhujam
Never. Uttama Shloka. The personality of Godhead of whom the Vedic hymns sing.
The personality of Godhead of whom the Vedic hymns sing.
Vartanam. Of those who live on them.
Of those who live on them.
Jusatam. Of those who are engaged in.
Those who are engaged.
Tat is. Kata Amritam.
Kata Amritam.
Transcendental topics about him.
Transcendental topics.
it so happens.
It so happens.
Some Brahma.
Some Brahma.
Misconception. Anta. At the end. Kale. In time.
In time.
In time.
Api.
Api.
Also.
Smaratam.
Smaratam.
Remembering.
Tat.
Is. Padam ambujam.
Padam ambujam.
Lotus feet. Translation. This was so because those who had dedicated their lives to the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead, of whom the Vedic hymns sing, and who are constantly engaged in remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, do not run the risk of having misconceptions even at the last moment of their lives. The highest perfection of life is attained by remembering the transcendental nature of the Lord at the last moment of one's life. This perfection of life is made possible by one who has learned the actual transcendental nature of the Lord from the Vedic hymns sung by a liberated soul like Sukadeva Goswami, or someone in that line of the cyclic succession. There is no gain in hearing the Vedic hymns from some mental speculator. When the same is heard from an actual, self-realized soul and is properly understood by service and submission, everything becomes transcendentally clear. Thus, a submissive disciple is able to live transcendentally and continue to the end of life. By scientific adaptation, one is able to remember the Lord even at the end of life, when the power of remembrance is slackened due to the derangement of bodily membranes. For a common man, it is very difficult to remember things as they are at the time of death. But for the grace of the Lord and his bona fide devotees, the spiritual masters, one can get the opportunity without difficulty. And it was done in this case of Maharaj Purikita. Om Jnana Timaram Dasya Janam Jina Shivakaya Chaksuham Nirvimina Dasmai Sri Guru Dev Maha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Kuchade Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamani Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravam Kacharini Namaste Chasimha Varipas Kacharini Sitarini Mukam Karoti Vachanam Bandhum Lam Jayate Girim Yakripa tamaham bande shri gurum bin kari vancha kapatiri vishya kripa sindhu deva cha patitan adhan vishya 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 jaya si krishna chaitanya prabhu nitananda siya deva sikra hare krishna hare krishna 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 hare rama my only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So there are two different types of verses found in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Those verses which are standalone verses, and those verses which are meant to be viewed collectively. At the very first of this verse, very first words, there's a statement, this was so. Now immediately, if you're having a conversation, or if you're beginning a conversation with someone, and they say, this was so, because, wait, what was so? Because there's no, you know, backstory at that statement. So our analytical process is going to ask that, what is so? How do you? So for that answer, we go to the previous verse, verse number 3, which Narottama Gopal spoke about yesterday. And that opens with the statement, furthermore, which is also an indicative word that shows something has already been said. Okay, so we'll go to the verse before that, which, you guessed it, opens with the word furthermore. So, all right. So then we go to the verse before that, which is the very beginning of the chapter. And that verse at the beginning of the chapter says, due to the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who acts wonderfully, Maharaj Parikit, those struck by the weapon of the son of Drona in the mother's womb could not be burned. Then, the following verse builds up on that. This gives the foundation for the second verse. Maharaj Trikut was always consciously surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he was neither afraid nor overwhelmed by fear due to the snake bird, which was to bite him because of the fury of a Brahmin. Which leads to the third. Furthermore, after leaving all his associates, the king surrendered himself as a disciple of the son of Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, and thus he was able to understand the actual position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at last gave up his mortal body on the banks of the Ganges. This was so because those who had dedicated their lives to the transcendental topic of the Personality of Godhead, of whom the Vedic hymns sing, and who are constantly engaged in remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, do not run the risk of having misconceptions, even at the last moment of their life. So this particular group of four verses collectively are necessary to be seen because it brings us to this understanding of what was so and why it's culminating like that. It explains to us the glories of Maharaj Prakrit, the activities of his life that lead us up to this point, where we're able to have this statement presented to us. And what are those activities? Basically, that he was dedicated solely to the process of hearing, chanting, and remembering. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. So right here, in these four verses, but culminating in this fourth one, we have a very valid and solid example of what the result of hearing and chanting and remembering Lord Krishna will bring us. It will bring us the constant and dependable shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but more to the point of this section of the Bhagavatam and these particular verses, it will bring us freedom from misconceptions at the time of death. Very, very important. Prabhupada's given in many different places detailed explanations of what death is like. The life air is choking up in the body, the throat being blocked, losing control of the bodily functions, not being able to speak, one's mental capacity becoming challenged or completely incapacitated, losing the focus. So, a very precarious position that, quite frankly, is filled with fear and terror. I was right at my father's bedside when he passed away. Fortunately for him, I was chanting out 50 years. But, you know, I saw this look of fear, not knowing what was going on his face as this moment was coming. And this is what it's like. Prabhupada uses the word the common man. For the common man, and humility embraced, we have to accept, we're not the common man. We're not common people. We have taken to the path of devotional service. That gives us a step up, if you will. It gives us a respected, advanced position, only by the mercy of the Master, but nonetheless, it's there. So, you know, for the common man, that's an issue. For us, it's not supposed to. You know, but why is that? Well, it's because, as it's stated right here, for the devotee, by the grace of the Lord and his bona fide devotees, the spiritual masters, one can get this opportunity to remember Krishna without difficulty. Finish. It's that simple. As long as we prepare ourselves for this test, as Prabhupada said, the ultimate test, we understand that living our life is about being ready for that final test. When I used to drive Uber and Lyft, you know, I'd drive all college students around, and, you know, exam time, you could just see the anxiety. You could hear it, they talked about it. You know, that all this time they spent coming up to this point of taking this test, and their entire life depended on the success of this test. Not really so, but, you know, that was the perception. Well, in this case, yes, our entire life does depend on our success in this ultimate test, as Prabhupada said. Because otherwise, I'm going to take another birth. It might not be so pretty. And we know Kali Yuga's not going to be so pretty. The further down Kali Yuga we go, the worse it's going to be. I was listening to a lecture the other day, and Prabhupada said, I forget exactly how the conversation transpired, but the topic came up of what will Krishna consciousness be like in 10,000 years. Prabhupada said, there will be no Krishna consciousness. There will be no devotees. He said, it will be hell and Kalki will come and kill us. So the point is that, you know, we don't want to come back. You know, we want to pass this test. Doubly confirmed. At any rate, because this is going to happen to all of us. We just this past week saw the fasting another dear God brother, Suradas. And, you know, glorious departure. Brahma Muhurta time, surrounded by devotees chanting, listening to the prophet's japa, hearing the sound vibration from his lotus mouth. You know, this is a wonderful way to leave this world. And at our age, you know, a good chunk of us, at our age, this is going to start happening practically on a daily basis. Jihiro passed away again. I remember whenever I talked to my mother, she would say, remember from church, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so? I have no clue, you know, but I'm supposed to remember. So I kind of remember. Well, you know, he passed away, you know, and this was her regular subject of conversation at every phone call, because they're all in their 80s and 90s, and then, as they say, dropping like flies. You know, so we're all in our 70s and some approaching 80s, and it's going to start meeting our circumstances. Prabhupada said, don't think this won't happen to you. It will. It happens to all of us. It's a staple. And, you know, there are many different traditions where this is embraced. I was listening to an interview with someone of the Native American tradition the other day. The child was questioning, you know, but I don't want you to die. And the person answered that, you know, I think it was a grandmother. She said, but this is the way of life. You're born and you die, so you have to embrace that. Here, we have the perfect example of how to embrace that. We're blessed by Prabhupada's own example of how to prepare to leave this world. Surrounded by devotees, surrounded by the holy name, remembering Krishna, speaking about Krishna. This is the wonderful example the Prabhupada gave us. And it's the way that we can embrace it. And Prabhupada says here, this is the highest perfection of life, to remember Krishna at the time of death. We spend our life doing so many things that we have to do. Depending upon our responsibility, you know, we have so many obligations, devotional and otherwise, but what is the ultimate obligation to remember Krishna at the time of death? And if we haven't prepared ourselves, if we haven't made the effort to make that a part of what we do each day, each minute, then we're going to fail. Now, Prabhupada uses an interesting phrase here. He says, this can be done by scientific adaptation. So the nature of science is, okay, here's a scientific activity, scientific function, and you look at it, okay, well, this was done, and then that led to being able to do this, which transitioned to being able to do this, and that gave this outcome. Okay, great, let's do it again. Okay, this was done, which led to being able to do that, which transitioned into this, which brought that outcome. Great, let's do it again. This is a scientific path, that over and over the same thing is done, and we get the same result. That's how they prove science. So right here, the perfection of life is made possible by one who has learned the actual transcendental nature of the Lord from the Vedic hymns sung by a liberated soul like Sukadeva Goswami or someone in that line of disciplic succession. Hearing from someone who is bona fide, from someone who's in the proper line, from someone who's connected. Someone who themselves has actually heard, practiced, and therefore can share that with others. They've done, you know, what they're asking us to do. You know, there was, when I was growing up, I didn't experience this in my family. My father My mother and father smoked when I was younger, but I remember when I became a teenager, they both gave it up. And then told me, okay, no, you can't smoke. This isn't good for you. Now, many times the parents would say, you know, it's really bad for you. You can't smoke. You know, well, what kind of hypocrisy is this? But that wasn't the case in my situation. Mother and father didn't, you know. Either they realized or they already given it up. I don't know that. But the point is that before instructing me, they'd not done. There's, of course, that famous story Prabhupada tells of the mother that takes her son to the sage. He says, please instruct my son not to eat sweets. He's not supposed to eat sweets or his health. And the sage says, okay, come back in 1 week. So she comes back in a week and brings the boy to the sage, and the sage says, don't eat sweets. So the mother says, by the way, I'm just curious, why do I have to wait a week? Because I was eating sweets. I could tell him not to eat sweets. So this is the understanding of Evam Param Parapraptam. Coming into cyclic succession, having done this, having been instructed in it, and accepting it. You know, Prabhupada makes a very strong statement here in this regards. He says there is no gain in hearing the Vedic hymns from a mental speculator. No gain. That's a really strong statement. There's a, oh, if I only knew Sanskrit and remember. Anyway, there's a verse that says if one receives their mantra from the guru and it's not from the succession, that mantra has no potency. So this is very, very significant in regards to the potency of the instruction one gets, the potency of the knowledge, the potency to be able to deliver one is completely gone if that person is not speaking in line with the parampara. Prabhupada many, many times deployed this. I'm adding nothing. I'm simply giving what my spiritual master has given to me. He spoke to me, I'm passing on pure message. Classic example Prabhupada used, like here in this community, we have many, many devotees that work for the post office. I mean, I would just venture to say we have more devotees who work for the post office than people who don't, that aren't devotees who work for the post office. So, and these devotees all deliver mail and they deliver packages. And they deliver that mail and packages as it's given to them. They don't open up the letter, open up the package, rifle through the contents, take out something, put something else in. You know, I mean, if they do that, it's a very high criminal offense. Very serious. How serious is it? Federal law for mail tampering is that if you are charged and found guilty of mail theft or mail tampering, you can face up to 5 years in federal, not a country club, in federal prison with fines of up to $250,000. That's serious. So how much more serious is it to tamper with the message of Krishna? The spiritual master is just delivering it. This is why Prabhupada says if you're listening to a mental speculator, there's no profit in it. No profit at all. So we have to be very cautious that, you know, what we're speaking is what Prabhupada gave us. So then we can ask, well, how do we learn this knowledge? Prabhupada tells us right here. When the same is heard from an actual self-realized soul, and it's in this verse of Gita, when the same is heard from an actual self-realized soul and is properly understood by service and submission, everything becomes transcendentally clear. This is appropriate to one of the earlier verses in this chapter. Everything becomes transparently clear. This should sound familiar to all of us. It's the basic ABCs of our devotional service. Now, in that verse, not necessarily in the flow of that Sanskrit, there are four very, very significant words. Vidhi, Pranipatena, Parikrashnina, and Seva. Understanding, approaching, submissive inquiry, and rendering service. These are the four key centerpieces of this verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, we could say they're the centerpieces of our entire devotional life, completely. They make up what allows us to move forward in the path of devotional service. These four things: to understand, to approach, to understand, to inquire, and to render service. In whatever order we orchestrate them during the course of our devotional life or devotional day, these four things have to be there for us to be successful. And what is a symptom of that success in this verse, to remember Krishna at the time of death. So everything's foundational in the process of moving forward in Krishna consciousness. This understanding is from the Bhagavad Gita at the very beginning. This is what we all, you know, for us older devotees, I mean, there was a time when they had four or five books, you know, maybe six. A new volume of the CC would come out, you know, every couple of months and just be like over the moon, you know. Vishvapanasad, Nectar Devotion, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Bhagavad Gita, and a few volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, not even completed yet. Now there's so many books available to us. Prabhupada says, well, you know, other books that are charters. But we cannot move past the foundational nature of the Bhagavad Gita. Everything ties back to that. In this fourth verse, fourth chapter, this emphasis that Prabhupada puts in the purport, he says the path of spiritualization is undoubtedly difficult. That should be a little bit reassuring to us as we struggle in our devotional life. Some of us struggle more than others, some don't struggle at all. You know, if we spend any time preaching to other devotees or, you know, mentoring younger devotees or talking to people in the streets, we know how difficult spiritual life is. There are many sincere seekers out there. Many. But, you know, they're confused, they're misled, doubtful, they're uncertain. You know, they don't literally understand. And if they can come across Prabhupada's instructions, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, teachings of Kum Kunti, one of my favorite sections of the Bhagavatam, chapter 8, the first canto, teachings of Kum Kunti. Prabhupada lectured me so many times. If you go to the database, there's so many lectures on that particular section. And when people come in contact with it, it's very practical. They can relate to this, you know. Kunti is, you know, she's a grandmother, she's a mother, she's, you know, a prominent figurehead, but at the same time, you know, she's not seen as some great mystic, you know, but to us she is, but so people can relate to the, you know, statements that she's making, you know. So if those sincere people out there hear from these sources, and those sources are not pure in their intention, then the result is, as I say, confused, misled, you know, doubtful, uncertain, just kind of meandering through spiritual life. I remember before I came in contact with Krishna consciousness, I mean, I had pursued several different paths, gone down this and that, and listened to this yogi and that, you know, swami or whatever, you know. I remember one guy in Dallas who was going to his ashram, and I would come away from his lectures just going, what the hell did he just say? What was the point? It just, none of it made any sense. It sounded like gobbledygook. Now, part of it may have been my confused state of mind, but a lot of it, later, learning about that individual and having come in contact with Prabhupada, was because it was just speaking gobbledygook, you know? There was no gain because it was mental speculation. And then we come in contact with Prabhupada's Gita. We hear from Srila Prabhupada. Everything is scientific. Everything is precise. Everything has a culmination to it that makes sense. That's because these other persons, they're motivated by profit, distinction, fame. You know, they're not motivated by bringing the suffering conditioned souls to the path of pure devotional service. The personality of God. And it doesn't matter what religious tradition one looks at, we see that, you know, there's, you know, infamous, you could use the word televangelist, you know. I remember there was one guy who used to be on the early mornings, you know. He would, you know, make these pleas and send in donations, and he would send you a piece of cloth you could cry on, or crazy stuff like this, you know. And people support him wildly, you know. The very idea of being misled is not something exclusive to the Catholic devotional life. Leaders across the board are unable, many times, to separate their personal motives, their personal desires, from the real essence of the teaching. So this was not something that we found Yeshua taught about. And therefore, it's absolutely mandatory to have a guru who's in the bona fide line of disciplic succession. You can't trace back from the current day, and I only speak of Christianity because that's the faith I was raised in. You cannot trace back any of your modern church leaders disciplically all the way to Jesus. It's not there. It's too many directions. We can follow Prabhupada with a disciplic line all the way back to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Those that come in that line are very, not arrogantly proud, but very proud. Yes, we're the 17th generation from Gopalbhakta Goswami. I guess now it's the 19th generation from Gopalbhakta Goswami. And you can follow that. And the lessons, the instructions, the message remains the same. So we're so profusely blessed to have the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, to have that clear, concise, scientific direction. And the Prabhupada's followers passed that on. Devotees who are on the strict path of following Prabhupada, the unadulterated transmission of his message and his teachings. This is where they get the potency. This was Prabhupada's strength, and it's our strength as well when we do the same. So, what happens when all of this becomes, as Prabhupada said, transparently clear? Well, here again, in this short book, what Prabhupada tells us in very plain language. Thus, a submissive disciple is able to live transcendentally and continue so to the end of life. Again, this indicative word, thus, this means as a result of or as a consequence of. As a result or consequence of what? As a result or a consequence of being submissive. This quality, this humility, it's your it's mandatory for making any advancement in spiritual life, for making any progress in disconnecting ourselves from our false ego, disconnecting ourselves from disconnecting ourselves from identifying with this body. Interesting thing to mention about the false ego. By now the entire world knows I work at Lowe's, but there's this new line of power equipment for yards called ego. Now I'm sure it's got something to do with the environmental, whatever the name means, but it's called ego, E-G-O, ego. And this stuff is incredibly powerful. It's battery run. And the battery's just like miles ahead of everything else. So, you know, pretty much our ego is like that. It's very powerful, and it's miles ahead of our spiritual life, you know. When I saw this brand come on, I'm like, yeah, I don't need more ego, but at any rate, when Sanatana and Rupa Goswami, very elevated government ministers, very respected, you know, big, big employees, when they approached Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they tied rope around their neck. This was an indication of being in a low position. One ties rope around the neck of an animal. A, to keep the animal from going anywhere, but B, to show ownership. When you go around Govardhan, at different parts of Govardhan, you'll see different colored ropes. They're all plastic ropes, different colored ropes around different animals, and that indicates where they belong, who owns them. It's one system. It's an interesting way to, you know, kind of distinguish that. So this having a rope around the neck, it shows, you know, you know, you have no independence. An animal has no independence. So although they were big, you know, government employees and very well respected and, you know, already established in functional life, when they came before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they took this extremely humble position. The famous verse Prabhupada always quotes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, read the Kayani. Sanatana Goswami came out. I mean, here he is, a, you know, prominent individual, very respected. People call me a great learned man, but can't. Please, you don't start. When Narottam Das Thakur, when he came before Lokanath Goswami, he was the son of a king. Very, very prominent individual. He was the heir apparent to the throne. And what did he do? He cleaned the school of Lokanath Goswami. And he didn't make a big deal of it. This was the other side. Hey, guys, look how humble I am. I'm cleaning Lokanath's toilet. That wasn't his move. He simply did the service and kept quiet about it. He never said anything. This is the move of humility. So we see here, Maharaj Prithit has all the qualifications that would allow him to seek prestige, to seek honor, to seek worship. But he doesn't look for that. He's never, if we examine his life, he's never sought that throughout his whole life. I mean, we just imagine, if you will, Prithit Maharaj. Oh, excuse me, guys. Krishna came and saved me in the womb. You know, I'm that person. You know, what's your qualification? I mean, we don't see that arrogance there. It's something we can't even imagine Prithit Maharaj saying, because he's exactly the opposite. Externally, he's surrendering himself to some avaduta that wears no clothes, has no, shall we fairly say, personal grooming, and has just arrived from somewhere in the forest and sat down and started speaking. And immediately surrenders. This is the external vision. We, of course, know, as Prabhupada points out here, that this is the visual swami, the direct son, the gossip, who's the incarnation of Krishna. Prabhupada says, by the grace of a bona fide spiritual master like Sukadeva Goswami, it is quite possible to know everything of the superior energy of the Lord, by which the Lord manifests his eternal name, qualities, pastimes, paraphernalia, and variegatedness. By that process of surrender, Prithit Maharaj understood everything. Everything. It was all made clear to him. But what was the method of his surrender? It's because his entire life was in that move of surrender. It wasn't something he just picked up right then and there. Prabhupada was asking, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? And you become Krishna conscious in a second. Okay, that is true. Most of us are not going to experience that before Krishna consciousness can be here. But because Prithit Maharaj led his life in such a way, he was constantly absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord, constantly remembering the Lord, constantly surrounded, hearing these Vedic hymns sung by great personalities, he had no fear. He had no reluctance. And Prabhupada mentions elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, this is because he was Narayana Parayana. The Narayana Parayana practices remembrance of the Lord constantly. This status, this position of being a Narayana Parayana, gives us the ability to always appreciate the Lord's presence in our life. Prithit Maharaj had already been saved in the world. So he knew if the Lord wants to save me from this snake, where he will. If he doesn't want to, then that's also his desire. So he had no fear. Now, many of us come across a snake in the yard, just a black racer. You know, I know some people in this room that, you know, are very afraid of having a particular small snake in their bushes. So if we come across just a little black racer, what to speak of if we have this snake bird? This is like a cobra type of snake with wings and ferocious fangs and claws on the end of the wings. Now imagine you step outside your front door and you come across this creature. The fear that's going to embrace us. Prabhupada even mentions that when his Brahmin boy cursed him, he could have eliminated that curse. He had that purpose. Prabhupada says that much. But he took it as the mercy of the Lord. He didn't think, oh, you know, he said, I've made an offense here, unintentionally, but I've made an offense, therefore, let the reaction come. And because he was drawing a prana, because he had spent his life practicing devotional service, because he had surrounded himself by individuals who influenced him like that, therefore he was not afraid. And because of the fact he had already had scientific proof that Krishna was going to save him, whatever happens is Krishna's arrangement. So this was his state of mind. This was how he was able to be peaceful as he approached the time of death, unlike common man who was choking up, freaking out, fear, not knowing what's going on. Unlike that, he was able to be peaceful. He was able to be fearless in the presence of the snake bird coming to, hasn't appeared yet, but coming to get him like this. So all of these things were there because of his practicing devotional service throughout his life. And this all brought him to a very peaceful state. As Prabhupada says several times in these three or four verses, this is the sign of the pure devotee. So we have this option before us. We can faithfully take up devotional service, seeing the scientific nature of it, that so many people before us, so many people I'm surrounded by, have done this and received this result. So we can embrace it like that, and we can make our lives such an activity, all of our lives, that at the time of death we're not here. At the time of death we are happy. You know? And even something is a little awry in our devotional life. There was a recent post, Giriraj Swami was posting this. There was one devotee, very senior devotee, had done a huge amount of preaching, big sannyasi, and he had fallen away from the path of devotional service. Matter of fact, I came in contact with him when I was running a health food store in New York years ago. Had fallen to a very, very bad state. A heroin addict, contracted AIDS, and ended up in the hospital dying. He was in a coma. And the doctors told the devotee sisters they were at his side when he passed away. And all of a sudden he opened his eyes and he looked at the door. He said, Prabhupada, and then he passed away. Our devotional service endears us to Prabhupada, endears us to Krishna. But we shouldn't count on that. Because I think, just like Prabhupada says, we don't count on a honorary degree from university. You know, many times big personalities or, you know, respectable individuals who get an honorary degree to such and such university. They didn't do anything. They didn't crack a single book. They didn't spend any hours in the classroom, didn't enroll in the university or pay the tuition or anything, but they're given an honorary degree due to something they did. Sometimes it happens. Not everybody. There are a lot of very famous people that have done amazing things that have no honorary degrees to anything. So we don't want to count on the fact, well, I'll get an honorary degree in devotional service and Prabhupada will bring me back. It may happen. But we want to count on the fact that I've spent my entire life engaged in devotional service, and in this way, the scientific proof is that I get Prabhupada's mercy and not have to take another birth. As Prabhupada says, this is a sign of truth. We'll finish there. Thank you very much. If there's any questions or comments or corrections or nothing, I'm open.
Thank you for your class. There was a point you made in the beginning where you were speaking of the story of the teacher who told the boy to not eat sweets, and after a week he said that because he himself had to stop eating sweets. And then you made a point about those who are either on the lines of those who are mental speculators then their knowledge that's passed down doesn't have any value. So I was wondering, my understanding of mental speculation is that your knowledge is not coming from an authoritative source, it's coming from your own mind or your own concoction. Is it also that mental speculation can be not practicing what you're preaching? Is that another way to see it?
Well, that's a part of it. And first of all, it wasn't me to say it, it was Prabhupada. So Prabhupada mentions that no benefit because they're passing on mental speculation. They're not passing on the pure message of Krishna, just like the postman. The benefit of having a good postman is you get that $100 check in the mail. Now, of course, everybody knows you don't send cash anymore. Nobody sends cash anymore because there's every chance the letter might get lost, and then that's lost. I remember it was a practice for some time in my early days of going to India, when you would send the mail, it's before email and the internet, all like that. You'd go up to the counter with a postcard to send home and a stamp on it, and you would wait to see the man behind the counter cancel the stamp off on the letter. Because otherwise, as soon as you turned around, he'd take the stamp off, resell it, and he'd throw the letter away, and then pocket that money that he resold. So, that, it's the function in the post office. You're going to the post office, a bona fide place. You're going to the Vedas, they're a bona fide source. You're giving it to someone representing the post office. You're hearing from someone who's representing the Vedas. But the message becomes polluted just as the person behind the counter has become polluted by some personal motive. So that's what Prabhupada is interested in. All right, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.
Thank you.